Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob is here.
Hey, guys.
Hopefully you can hear us okay. Everything's coming through. It's been a little while since we did one of these, a couple weeks. Anyway, thanks for having us. It's been a little bit since we've done this live on YouTube. And we don't have like a super long show for you this week. We're just going to talk about the news, take a few questions from Twitter, you know. Going through the motions, if you see the look of abject fear on our faces, it's because the preview guide starts on Sunday and goes for like a full 2 weeks.
It's pretty monstrous.
And then we're doing, immediately after that, we're going to do the simuldub guide this year. So, if you're listening to this and it's Friday, October 1st is when the preview guide starts, with Gintama starts on Sunday, I think. Right? And then there's a few shows on Monday.
A couple things Monday, and it really sort of kicks off in earnest Tuesday, and then it's all downhill or uphill, depending on what, maybe both at once from there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I'm enjoying, I got a visit from the seasonal allergy fairies. So
yeah.
So I apologize for my snorfling on this podcast, and hopefully it won't be too bad.
Yeah. So we're getting ready for that. But after we're done with the initial preview guide, then we're going to do the simuldub guide again, which, you know, covers every simuldub as they come out. And then on November 1st starts the manga guide. And then 2 weeks after that, we have our gift guide. Anyway, it's a lot of stuff happening.
It's a lot.
Yeah, we should talk, though, about all the... There's, like, a ton of news this week, like, a ton of stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I thought we could have a show anyway, just a little short one here.
Hollywood is just going for it
just
right
going
now.
For it, yeah.
They woke the fuck up, and now they're, like, thrashing in the water. And they're like, look at him go! Here's a chicken, and the chicken is your name.
Yeah, right. We'll get to that.
Anyway, this metaphor got away from me, I apologize.
So, the first thing I wanted to talk about was this Blade Runner anime that came out called, what is it called, like, Blackout
2022.
So it's supposed to take place only a few scant years from now.
I watched 3 years off the end of the original film,
which is
the only, miraculously, it took them a long time to come around to it, but the original film is like the only official Blade Runner piece of media, really.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There was a video game that came out like 20 years ago.
As far as like canonicity.
Yeah, sure.
It is like, you know, people, oh, Blade Runner, like, and it really is just one movie from 1982.
Well, it bombed when it came out.
Yeah, it did.
And,
but, like, people have...
You know, famously.
People have talked about it for 30 years since. So.
Well, it was one of the most influential movies ever made, I want to say, aesthetically.
Aesthetically.
At least, if not thematically. But aesthetically, it is, like... Certainly, you could count it among, like, the most influential movies ever made. It had a huge impact on anime. We actually have an article coming up next week about that, about like the incredible influence that movie has had, especially on 80s OVAs and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
like, especially on anime. Like,
if you came, and here's the thing, like, if either you were an animator who worked on anime in the 80s and you were heavily influenced by Blade Runner, or you were heavily influenced by the things that those animators made.
Right.
So, in essence,
it's kind of like
were,
the Evangelion issue of like, and Evangelion's much younger, but it's still like, there are people now who are influenced by Evangelion, but they're not, they're actually influenced by other things that were influenced by Evangelion.
Yeah.
So it's going to
Argento
keep going.
Soma, for example. Just kidding.
No, but it's certainly like specific visions and themes and stuff like that were like, oh, this is an echo of Evangelion, but you got it from something that was copying Evangelion.
Yeah.
There's been enough generations of artistic creation involved.
That'll happen with Madoka someday.
Yeah, Blade Runner, that's like three or four layers of that.
Yeah, totally. And so they put out this animated short, which was Shinichiro Watanabe, who directed Cowboy Bebop. And
it's about 12 minutes.
It's about 12 minutes, about two sentences worth of story. But it feels like pretty crucial story to me.
It does. I was like, oh, this seems important. Like, if so, this next month is 2074. Is that, do I have the year right? Is it 2074?
I guess. I don't know.
It's something like that. But I think it's 2070-something. So that's 50 years after whatever this is. So maybe it's not relevant anymore. But, like, it seems like, oh, this seems like maybe crucial information, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't seen the movie yet. It comes out next week, and there aren't even any, like, so you'll see positive buzz for that movie right now, because what they do is now, Warner does this especially, and they've been doing it a lot. They host a screening of their movie for select critics, and they let those critics apparently tweet one thing. They can tweet once or a couple times, so long as it's positive. I don't know if they, like, you can say something if it's something nice. I'm not sure if that's what it is. The thing is, they did this, the last movie they did this for was Wonder Woman, and they largely don't seem to do it for bad movies. Now, I liked Wonder Woman. You were sort of blah on Wonder Woman, but you wouldn't say it was a bad movie.
No, I thought it was a good movie. It was just a personal, I didn't have like a personal emotional reaction.
Yeah, you just,
to it.
Personally, wasn't your thing personally, but
it was a very nicely
made. It was a perfectly fine movie.
Yeah.
They're doing that again for this, uh-huh. And the comments are generally like, oh, this is actually really good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's positive early buzz. So, I don't know if it's good or not, but hopefully I can put everything into context. The only thing is that, like, Blade Runner has had, like, this enormous impact on anime. Like, giant. And, in fact, like, name another movie that's as or more influential.
It's really difficult.
Besides, like, Star Wars. Like, besides Blade Runner is, like, the first one you go to. And Star Wars feels like number two, maybe. Like,
right.
You know, the Bubblegum Crisis is just a Blade Runner ripoff, pretty much. Like, it's its own thing. It's its own story, of course. Please don't at me. But, like, It lifts its entire aesthetic from Blade Runner, and it improves on it, and has its own cool shit going on in its own right. But that's how big a deal it was. So to have the director of Cowboy Bebop make a Blade Runner anime is extremely significant. I don't want to say spiritually, but in a way, it kind of is. Like, it means a lot.
Somebody mentions Twin Peaks. That was also that's like five or six on the list, but that's definitely
it's
on
up.
The list.
Yeah,
if you wanted to make a list, that would be really interesting. Make
Streets of Fire. Someone mentions definitely, yeah. Absolutely, Streets of Fire. Yeah, without a doubt.
I'm always Streets tickled by. So I don't think this was actually influential necessarily because it doesn't influence the kind of stories that are told by anime. But I'm always tickled by the and same thing with Dog of Flanders. Like Dog of Flanders, because that was originally not a Japanese movie. That was originally a story from Belgium or whatever, or Holland, I think. And The Graduate aren't influential, but they love referencing Dog of Flanders and The Graduate because like a bazillion people saw them in Japan.
Love referencing The Graduate is such a weird.
It was
like,
a really big hit in Japan.
Especially
that's
when
why.
You see, like, well, it's weird when you see it because like I was
a whole generation was like influenced really.
I was
by
I was revisiting some Yurisei Atsura, and at the end of one of the movies or the OVAs, they just recreate the end of the scene from The Graduate with Lum pounding on a stained glass window in a church. Mm-hmm. And then her, I'm surprised it's not like her and Ataru get on a bus and just like kind of stare.
Yeah.
Off and
well, it is. Infamously, and this is true. I don't know if this is true in Japan. Maybe not, considering that they have the larger audiences there have more of attraction to sort of the flatness of ennui at the end of a story. But like in America, like classically, the last 5 minutes, the last shot of The Graduate is was not really acknowledged by a lot of audiences when they saw it.
Yeah, oh, like people misunderstood the film.
Yeah, a lot of critics picked up on it, but like a lot of audiences didn't necessarily grasp that the last shot of that movie kind of recontextualizes the ending a lot.
But if I know like the kinds of things that tend to catch on in Japan, that shot kind of
probably did. Yeah,
yeah. But it is weird when you see references to it, so many references, and like I wonder how many anime fans have seen The Graduate, mm-hmm. or even people. This nowadays it feels like it's not like it shows on cable every now and then, but it still feels like something only really older people know about, you know? Yeah.
And in fairness, that's where we'll get off The Graduate in a second, but in fairness, that last shot wasn't scripted, so it is, you know, technically the director wasn't super thinking about it when he made the movie, but then he was like, oh, wait, we should do this instead of it being pseudo-happy, we should make it completely not happy. Anyway.
Well, it makes it a classic instead of a bad movie.
Exactly, right, yeah.
Like, it would be a bad movie if it's like, and then they lived happily ever
that
after
weird,
together.
Yeah.
That would be terrible.
It wasn't happily at first, it was just like, what now? But he takes the what now into, like, existential dread with the time that he holds on that.
Someone in the chat mentions that The Graduate's adjusted gross would be $600 million now.
Yeah, it was, you know, anyway. Point is, yeah. You know, a lot
more people used to go to the movies.
However, Blade Runner, in terms of anime, Blade Runner is probably the number one most aesthetically influential thing.
Yeah, I would say so. Without a doubt.
Hollywood movie, anyway.
Anyway, so it's really significant. I thought there would be more to this, because they were really hyping it up.
It's 15 minutes.
I thought there would be more to it, but like 20 minutes, half an hour, you know, episode length, maybe a little bit more story in there, but it's just, it's what you get with a promotional thing for a movie. So little snippets of story, you're not really getting anything super significant. But it got me thinking, well, first of all, the short itself, I thought it was really good looking, had some really good, like weighty action to it. Like, they had really superstar animators working on that thing, which is not, if you went to Japan and said, who wants to work on a Blade Runner anime? Everyone over the age of 40 would, like, come running out of the building.
It's like a vision of, like, a shot from, like, a zombie movie.
Yeah,
where everybody
totally. But so they got, like, top shelf talent to do this thing, and it looks great.
The characters, so I'm glad that I didn't even need to, like, look it up. I was like, oh, so Shuku Murase is still getting work. So for those who don't know, Shuku Murase is, if you're familiar with how a lot of Watanabe-type works leading into the height of, it wasn't exactly a boom period, but the best they ever did before things endlessly went downhill, the way Manglobe anime look, like Samurai Champloo and Ergo Proxy. And
yeah, Manglobe,
so,
right.
Right, so that's all because of Shuku Murase, who is one of many people who worked with, again, Cowboy Bebop created so many careers, like, who worked with, let's put a train of thought, who worked with Watanabe on Cowboy Bebop, and his aesthetic is so that nothing else looks like what Murase draws, which is sort of that, like, dark, sallow, thick-lipped, like, terse, you know, like, intentionally, like, ugly, but in a really cool way, like, character design.
I know what you're talking about, and I feel you on that, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but he stuck with Bangalore basically until they went away, because he directed Gangsta, and Gangsta looks like, nothing else looks like what he draws, but Gangsta does. And so, anyways, but I was like, oh, I hope he still gets work, because, like, he held on to the end, basically, on these, like, really limited animation projects that can't really, his style can't really be animated with the kind of budgets and the resources that he gets. So apparently he took over, after it went into production craziness, he took over the direction on Genocidal Organ, or maybe he was replaced on Genocidal Organ.
I have not seen a single one of those films yet.
I've seen all of them except Genocidal Organ, and all the ones that were released anyway. If there's one that I don't think there's one in Japan that wasn't released over here. But anyway, that's a different conversation. But, like, I'm glad he's still getting work, because my point is this animated film looks really, I mean, it's only 12 minutes, but it looks really, really good, and they can, like, draw his style and, like, maintain it, which is good. The main character of this, nobody really has names, but the main vigilante character of this, like, the animation on him is really good. So
yeah. And the girl
is cool too. I was more drawn to, like, the sort of weightiness of this big scary you know, vigilante character.
It was cool.
He's seen some shit, and he's gonna blow all of you up, you know.
It was good shit. They, you know, like, it made me think, like, oh, like, there is, you know, if they give a shit and they get good people in charge of it, yeah, you could definitely make more Blade Runner, make more stuff inside that universe, and, like, yeah, it would be cool and good. Like, it wouldn't, because your brain,
it's
surprising
that it hasn't been mined yet, but
your,
I mean,
brain just automatically is like, nah, it's gonna be, I don't want the same shit that I had in the 80s just barfed back up and given to me again. Like, you just assume that whoever's gonna do it, it's gonna look too clean, it's gonna look too new, it's gonna look like those Hobbit movies, you can see the spirit gum on everyone's beards, and it's not recapturing anything for you, like, that's what it's going to be like. But, like, by all accounts, this movie's good. I thought the short did a great job bringing back that atmosphere and everything. Even had Edward James Olmos in it. You know, that was cool. So it was good. And, like, that totally lifted my spirits and made me think, like, oh, are we going to get good new Blade Runner stuff? That'd be awesome.
Well, that would be, like, you know,
it'd be delightful.
I like, the joke I like to make is, if Blade Runner 2049, I had the wrong number earlier, but if Blade Runner 2049 is, like, half a masterpiece and half, like, kind of bad, then it will be equal to the original Blade Runner.
Yeah, we're gonna rewatch this movie next week, so we'll.
I don't mean
we'll
half bad, half bad. I mean half one of the best movies ever made, and half please toss this out and redo it. Like, that's Blade Runner to me, anyway. And I am talking about the final cut, not just the.
We need like a hot take counter. I need to get like a big button where I can smash
it. I'm very familiar. I've seen Blade
hot
Runner
take.
Many
It'll
times.
It'll have a little noise and everything.
I've seen it many times. I am fascinated by it, and I think that, like, so it bombed for many, many, many reasons that aren't really related. It was marketed very poorly, but it bombed for many reasons that are not related to the content of the film. But, like, that theatrical cut is almost unwatchable. It is really bad. It does actually destroy the movie. A lot of people are like, oh, the final cut really changes everything, and usually if that's not the case, people sort of overspeak about that. But, like, the theatrical cut is so unwatchable that you kind of...
That's not the first time... That's not the only time that happened with a Ridley Scott movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think his best movie is Kingdom of Heaven, director's cut,
mm-hmm.
which is a totally different movie from the movie that came out in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good... The theatrical cut of that movie is garbage. It's a bad movie. Mm-hmm. The director's cut is, like, the best movie he's ever made.
Mm.
Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's super good.
Mm-hmm.
It's really... I need to see it again. My opinion might change, but, like, it's definitely better than anything he's made since then.
Mm.
And, like, his genre stuff is good, but Kingdom of Heaven was, like... It was really good.
I mean, his genre stuff is good before, like, the mid-2000s... Like, the last good movie he made, Gladiator, was that...
Kingdom of Heaven was after Gladiator.
Okay, see, I haven't seen that one. But, like, yeah, no, he has
a long... It's the movie he made next.
He has a long track record of really, like, inspired films. If not great, then at least, like, visually or structurally inspired. And then after that, not so much.
Yeah.
But, you know. He's really old. Like, that happens. He's made a bazillion movies. What do you want?
I mean, I have a lot of love in my heart for Ridley Scott. He's been through a lot. Like,
yeah.
He's had
been
a life.
Through a lot.
Yeah. And he seems to just want to turn out movies until he's dead, which is fine, but he's one of these filmmakers that I feel like deserves consideration, even Alien Covenant, which was by all accounts not a good movie.
Yeah,
he really had something to say with it anyway. It's worth paying attention to, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was real bad.
No.
It was real bad. I mean, it's worth paying. If you look, if you care about Alien, you should watch that because it's the closest thing to an actual Alien movie. Like, screw Prometheus. Like, Alien Covenant was the closest thing to, like, getting back to Alien, the original thing, because it's taken so many side roads. But it's bad. I mean, it's trying to burn it all down, sort of, in not a particularly thoughtful way. But, I mean, you know, at least it tried.
Yeah.
You could tell somebody kind of cared about it, I guess, while making it.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So...
Point being, talk about Ridley Scott.
So, it's yeah, I can sit here and talk about Ridley Scott for a long time. But the other thing that got me thinking about were the pre... Because... In the early 2000s, there was a big push by Warner Brothers specifically to do this kind of thing. If this movie had come out 15 years ago, it would be like The Animatrix, where you would have like a feature-length anthology of a bunch of different segments.
Remember Gotham Knight? That's my favorite.
Gotham Knight is another one. They made one for,
B-Train Batman?
Warner didn't make it, but, hang on, let me finish.
Sorry.
It
makes me smile.
Made me lose my train of thought. So... There was also one for The Chronicles of Riddick. One for Van Helsing. Those are fucking terrible.
Yeah,
don't
watch
them.
That's the nadir.
Yeah, those are really... But they didn't last very long.
It was really weird. There was one for Halo.
And there was one for Dante's Inferno, which actually had some really good work in it by Studio 4C. There's good stuff in... All of these actually have some good stuff in them, except for like Van Helsing and... Mm-hmm. Riddick could have been good, but it's not... Like, you could totally do an anime of that property, and it would probably be okay, but that Dark Fury thing was not good. So this thing got me to revisit The Animatrix, which I have not seen all the way through since it came out 15 years ago or whatever, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I
rewatched it.
Either.
Yeah, it's really good all the way through. Okay.
Oh, you got a caveat. All
right, there's some caveats. But, okay. Like, it's still really high quality, like... Fully featured animation, you're getting the best that these studios and directors and stuff had to offer. All the money and time in the world, apparently, to make really high-quality theatrical animation for this thing.
Mm.
There's really, really good... The stories in it are all really good. Like, the thing... I think people were disappointed with it at the time, largely because it doesn't tell you very much about what... Okay. In the lead-up to The Matrix Reloaded coming out...
Uh-huh.
The thing everyone wanted to know was what happens in the story. And people were, like, thirsty for this information. That was the only thing they cared about was what happens in the story. And they kept it all under wraps. It was really secretive. They put The Animatrix out, and it doesn't tell you much of anything.
Right.
About anything. It's just thought exercises in the Matrix world. Most of them are concerned with someone escaping the Matrix through some arcane means or being outside of the Matrix and then going back in to fuck with it a little bit. Like... That's largely what everything is about. It doesn't really tell you anything extra or expand the world very much.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's why people were largely disappointed in it. But, like, looking back on it now, it's really good. It's really good all the way through. Peter Chung's segment at the end is called Matriculated, which if you've seen it, I think you remember this. It's the longest and the lamest and the weirdest. I do miss Peter Chung. And he's the Anflex guy, if you don't know who I'm talking about. I do miss his style, because he used to see him a lot more back in the late 90s and the early 2000s.
Well, that's the thing. His style is extreme. I associate just the way all of his stuff looks with the year, like, 2001.
Yeah.
It just, like...
It's dated. It looks dated now, which is weird, because it's just his style. It's not, like...
But it became so influential within... It, like, burned hot and then faded out really hard, but it was extremely influential on, I think, the aesthetic of, like, even advertising and just stuff in 2001. So,
yeah.
And then after that, not as much.
Yeah.
Something happened. I don't know what it was to change culture at that time. But
yeah, I don't know. So, if you haven't seen it in a long time, or if you've never seen it, I actually recommend going back and looking at the Animatrix again. It has so much good stuff in it. There's a Kawajiri short in it that's really good. The Koike short is amazing. I actually, when I was rewatching it, I mistook it for Chung's short because it is a little similar to his style. But it's Koike's work, and it looks fucking incredible. There is a weird... The best thing in it is... It has the two best animated prequel things I've ever seen, which is the Second Renaissance, which does tell the story of how humanity wound up in those pods in the first place in those movies.
Is that the Maeda one?
That's Mahiro Maeda, who was a rising star in the early 2000s.
What happened?
And then just... I don't know. Genkutsuo came out and then just... Like, I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah. Now he's good. What the hell?
All he does now is work on the Eva movies, and I think he does
some stuff.
Maybe that's
what it is. But Evangelion ate his hate.
I don't think it's eaten anybody's career to that extent.
I don't know.
Not even Anno. Anno's just like, fuck it. I'm going to do whatever I want.
Right. But I don't know.
So I'm not sure what happened. I wish I knew the story. If I ever get a chance to interview him again, I'll be like, hey, man, your resume.
What happened?
Yeah, there's
Come
a gap
back.
Here.
Like
what happened?
Work.
Yeah, you were fucking amazing, dude. Like, people were really excited about him. He directed these two shorts that are some of the, behind the first movie, probably the best thing in the entire Matrix series, are those two shorts, which is amazing that you go back and think that this animated direct-to-video stuff could even be better than the stuff itself. Those Second Renaissance shorts are as good, if not better, than what's in the movies. And I wish they would turn them into a whole movie. Because as an AI revolution story, it's way more interesting than, like, Terminator. It's way more grounded, realistic. It's really thoughtful and good. Like, it's just good shit. Really good. The only thing is, before that, so the big push, and they showed this one in theaters. It was one called The Final Flight of the Osiris, which maybe you remember this. It was done by Square Enix at their studio before Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within.
So it's CG.
Killed it. It's early 2000s Square Enix CG.
Okay, this is not ringing a bell. But it's in the
Animatrix, and it's in the same style as the Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within. They showed it before the movie Dreamcatcher.
Yeah,
which is why I saw Dreamcatcher
the
in the theaters.
The shit weasel movie.
Which is the Stephen King movie about shit weasels.
Uh-huh, that burst
exploding
out of
alien shit weasels that burst out of your colon.
Uh-huh.
You had to watch that.
starring Duddits.
That movie. but that's in there too. So there's some duds, but it's worth Duddits going back and taking a look at it. And I actually honestly also recommend that Dante's Inferno, at least the first half of it.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple segments that Studio 4C did that are really good, like legit, really have a fucking amazing animation in them.
Mm-hmm.
They're worth looking at. Mm-hmm. That game is real goofy. If you like crazy depictions of hell, the game is worth playing too. But yeah, so some of that early anime stuff, those co-productions that were made in the early 2000s to promote movies, some of it is actually worth going back taking a look at. The Blade Runner short reminded me of that, so I wanted to talk about it a little
bit. Don't bother with Gotham Knight, except for look up B-Train, Bishonen Batman.
Yeah, the B-Train, Bishonen Batman is... that was like Working Through Pain, I think, was the one that they did.
Yeah,
That's the name of it.
Really funny.
I reviewed Gotham Knight for the site, and that was the one I gave relatively high marks to because it was okay. It was pretty good.
It's just really funny because it's like... He's just so pretty. It's like, why? I've never seen, what's his name? Bruce Wayne look like that. It's really funny.
Yeah. It was pretty funny at the time. It's like, whoa, what? Is this like a new fall anime or something? Like, yeah.
I want like little Kira Kira sparkles around Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, totally. So, that's Blade Runner. There's been a bunch of news this week. I thought first we should talk about what happened with Kimono Friends. We just did a series discussion of this, and then Kadokawa, is it?
Yes.
Kadokawa shit can the director. Mm-hmm. Did they give a reason? They didn't, right? Did they give a reason why they shit canned him?
He blames it on Kadokawa, on issues in Kadokawa. Like, the only person who's given a reason is the director, and he blamed it on organizational issues in Kadokawa's higher echelon. Like, they're having some problems or something.
It's political?
Something like that. It's political.
Like company or, politics?
It's political or, like, a business implosion sort of a situation. But that he that was what he said, so that's all kind of all we have to go on.
So he quit. Or no, he got shit canned, yeah, along with two or three other guys, and then the rest of the staff has left in solidarity.
Uh-huh.
So then their response was to send out the voice actresses to, like, apologize for them and basically, like, take the hit? Anyway.
Anyway.
It's not a good situation.
It's, yeah.
It's not a good situation. So here's the question. Do you think that Kimono Friends could be the same? It will be the same, or has the potential. What do you think it's going to be after this transformation? Like, what will be left of Kimono Friends? What's your take on it?
I mean, even if they kept the staff, it wasn't going to be the same, because, like, with a hit of that magnitude, the resources are not going to be what it looked like. They're going to completely redesign it. They were going to completely redo the way they animate it. Like,
well, you don't know that. This is just your speculation.
This is my speculation, but
it's informed speculation, but
yeah, I don't. It wasn't going to be the same. Like, plus, they're going to react to, I think absolutely they're going to react to most of the fan base for that being, like, super moe about it. Like, I mean, you can look at, like, the thing, the American thing I compared it to was My Little Pony. And My Little Pony changed just based off bronies. And that already had millions of little girls watching. But just based on this crop of hundreds of thousands of bronies, that changed the show. They addressed it, and they changed a little bit how that show was written. So, with Kimono Friends, which is, like, mostly otaku, like, yeah, it was not going to be the same, I think, even with the same staff. However, having excised that staff and trying to do their own thing, like, I think it's possible to make something with the same spirit as the original. It's possible, but I think it is also less likely, and for those other reasons, because they know they're marketing explicitly to otaku, I think it's more likely to be more cute girls doing cute things. In fact, I think that's the most.
So that's what you think route. It's gonna be turn into is just cute girls doing cute things, not, like, nicely animated.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst case scenario, but it's the most predictable scenario. So I hope that doesn't happen. But the most predictable scenario I feel is more moe, more Dogokobo-esque. So,
oh, okay, that's a good,
which is fine.
That's a good example.
Which is fine, but, like, that's not Kimono Friends anymore to me.
It's so hard to pin down, like, what really made it. Because if it's just like, oh, this seems like it's for children and it's poorly animated, but secretly it's deep, which is kind of what made it catch on in the first place, because it feels like any time...
Over here, but in Japan, I'm not sure that was the sentiment. The sentiment I saw in Japan was mostly like, this is really healing for... Like, this is actually hitting the spot. It feels sincere healing to me, because that's the thing, like... Stuff like Dogokobo shows, like, sometimes they don't do well, and sometimes different, like, moe attempts don't really do well because it does feel too manufactured. And otaku, for as much as they love, like, give me the same old shit, I know this is escapism, but give me the same old shit. They want it to feel sincere. They want it to feel like sincere artists are behind it and they really feel these things. And with Kimono Friends, that was very true. Like, I would even say that, and I'm not into that kind of otaku stuff. And I feel like if that goes away, that would be, you know, kind of, that they would be able to tell.
I would argue, here's what I would argue. That feeling you're talking about, the thing that made it a success, that is intangible. Mm-hmm. It is difficult to imbue a show with that.
Right.
Ripping out the entire creative staff at this point means you, whatever comes next will just be, it will be a new thing.
Yeah.
It'll be the same franchise, so it will look like Kimono Friends, ostensibly look better than the old show.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be the same. And so I will not get optimistic or excited about new Kimono Friends until I see it and make a judgment on my own. Like, There's nothing for me to get excited about with a new Kimono Friends when you got rid of the entire creative staff responsible for making the first one special at all. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just one guy. It's not like they just got rid of the director and the rest of the team is still there.
Damn it.
They got rid of everyone who worked on that show.
All 10 of them.
Everyone who worked on the show that you liked is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I'm not going to be like, it's fine. It's fine. No, no. Like, I cared about the show. I liked it. You can't just ditch everybody and expect me to just react to the symbol that you put in front of me.
Right.
I need to know that what made that thing special is still there. So, personally, I think it was a huge mistake. I don't know
what they were thinking.
Like, give those guys the resource. Like, Komodo Friends didn't look like that because those guys wanted it to look like that. It looked like that because that's what they had the time and the resources to create.
The, show.
Like, the people making the show
and
were...
that's the one thing starting to change. So
yes. What I was excited about with Komodo Friends, and here's the reason I was excited about it in the first place, was... this team that made this special weird thing that people caught on, that caught on, will be given money and resources to do what they want to do, to make the show look like they want it to look. And now that's not going to happen. So fuck it.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, call the fucking cops. No, I don't know. I just don't...
Yeah, I think...
can't come back from, like, okay, then I'm officially... placing you outside of the wall of interest, and you can fight your way back
in fairness, if I'm going to blow your minds with this one, but for as neat as Komodo Friends was in many unexpected little ways, I don't think that it is particularly like nominal, unique, impossible to recreate artistic statement or
no,
aesthetic.
Of course not.
And I do think it would be completely possible and completely plausible to make a good Komodo Friends with, unfortunately, without that staff. It would be great if they were involved, but it sucks that they weren't. But it's not that complicated, and I think that you could get talented people to recreate that spirit, the spirit of that thing, and make a thing that fully feels as good or even better than the first thing. However, the issue is not so much whether they will or won't recreate the spirit of it. It's more, it sucks because it wasn't just another anime project. It felt like this weird underdog story that never should have gotten noticed. And so it feels like you especially... It's like the difference between an already successful person making a successful thing and, like, somebody plucking up a weird hit thing that was made by, like, just an average Joe. And I know these people are industry professionals, but it is like, it's an underdog story, and so you kind of want them to reap the benefits of that. So it's more, it's not so much, oh, they can't recreate their creative vision. Actually, I think they can. Their creative vision wasn't that complicated, to be quite honest with you. But like, but it's more a personal level of like, hey, these people deserve this. Like, they worked on this for like over a year, you know, they deserve this.
Yeah. I feel you on that. I'm willing to give them a little bit more credit for the thing that they made and suggest that you don't reach that many people, you don't connect with that many people, just like it might be on accident, but then you need to preserve the staff if you want to keep that accident going, right? You have to preserve the staff. Like, everybody I've talked to, the interviews that I've done and everything, the suggestion is I have to keep the staff. If you want the quality to stay like this, you have to let me keep these people. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not going to stay like this.
That's going to be interesting heading into the fall season. We have a show where all of the staff is the same except the director, so on Blood Blockade Battlefront. And that was actually the case with Attack on Titan, too. Attack on Titan Season 2, better than Season 1, and basically the only difference is the director. So, don't know. I mean... who knows what's going to happen.
The same situation. What if they gotten rid of everybody and the director on Attack on Titan?
Well, no, I'm not comparing it to Komodo Friends. I'm just saying here's some upcoming examples of comparing that, and we had one in the recent past. I'm not comparing it to Komodo Friends.
Well, we're about to get another big one because One Punch Man Season 2...
right, like that's... yeah, what the...
has landed at a completely different... JC staff. No Shingo Natsume.
And presumably none of his, like, web team, or... I mean, maybe some of his web team. Who knows?
I don't know, but... I mean, so here's a question. Here's what I think I think that's happening largely because they don't want to wait however many years it's going to take for Shingo Natsume and that team to be available again.
Yeah.
Right? Or I assume maybe Shingo Natsume doesn't want to just make one adaptations for the entire rest of his life. Mm-hmm. Maybe he doesn't want
to
do that.
The thing he moved to was Akka, which is like...
yeah.
Yeah, that's a big change.
So maybe he doesn't want to keep making one adaptations. But, like... that show now is at a completely different studio. It will have a totally different staff and everything. Do you think... so here's the question that I think it raises. Would you rather have a second season faster, so you get season 2 of One Punch Man a year and a half after season 1, or you get Attack on Titan, where you have to wait 4 years for the new season, but you get that entire same staff again, close to it, and you get
minus,
as close...
Minus the director, and it's not like he wasn't involved. He was.
Yeah, you get as close as you can to that original team making that thing. Mm-hmm. As you, would you rather wait and get the team, or get it faster, but with potentially lesser talents involved?
Yeah, well, I think from an artistic stand, from an artistic integrity sort of standpoint, then I would say always the same team. I'm a consumer entertainment standpoint, I think it depends. It's case by case and depends on how much I like the show and for what reasons I like it. If the reason that I like that thing, so blah blah, hey, Battlefront, I like it for two reasons, and like so I'm torn. I liked it because of Rie Matsumoto's direction, and her like pack 20 million things into 2 seconds. Like I like that thing about the show, but I also did like it for Yasuhiro Naito's material and his aesthetic, and that part's staying, and I'm losing the other part, and so I'm just gonna find out to what extent that affects the end result. So it's I think it's, as a consumer, it's case by case. It depends on how much I liked the thing and for what reasons, and what person I thought gave it that quality that I might get upset and say, oh fuck it, this person's not involved, or eh, it doesn't really matter if this person's involved or not. But from artistic camaraderie, I think you should always, if they're interested in staying on the projects, you should always maintain the team that you can. Because, like, they deserve that. If they made it a success, then they deserve that.
Yeah, I'm torn because, look, I understand the business reality is they're probably going to make more faster if they can get a team together that they think is capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. I understand that, and it's kind of dumb to hang on to this, like, well, I would rather they wait and get the original team to the point where you're rejecting these productions outright or going into them with a negative mindset just because it's not the same people. Like, I feel like that's not fair. You should always give it a shot, no matter what it is. I will give One Punch Man Season 2 a shot. If it's as close to as good as season one.
And because it's our jobs.
Yes. I have to give One Punch Man season two a shot.
I'm going
to
watch it no matter what.
There's a gun to my head. I mean, not literally, but yeah. I will definitely watch it and give it its due. I'm not going to go into it thinking, well, fuck this, JC staff, fuck it. Like,
No,
that's shitty.
And I'm going to be the same way with Kimono Friends. I'm going to be like, oh, good. And
You got rid of the... It's not based on really anything, right?
It's based on those designs. Here's the thing. The draw for me, Kimono Friends, wasn't necessarily the draw. It was the weird tone, and so I hope they recapture that weird tone.
I mean, those guys came up with that stuff.
Yeah. So,
and they got rid of all of them.
Well,
and you're like, you can recreate it.
If you understand the tone of it, and you understand sort of the specific kind of... Yeah, then I think you can recreate that. However, the other big draw for me...
That's like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. We're going to make Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, and Lord Miller will not be involved at all. Well, you see what you get.
Yeah.
You see what you get?
But I don't...
Those guys were responsible for the first one being any good at all. These guys were responsible for Kimono Friends being any good at all. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but there are other...
And you're saying, you can recreate
there
it.
There are other talented... In fact, there's a lot. There's probably more talented family show and kids show writers than there are adult content writers in anime. So, yeah, I think that you can find other talented people. There's a lot of talented women that work on these...
I'm gonna knock you down on this one at some point.
There's a lot of talented women that work on, like,
it's
going to
come out and be
shows,
awful, keep, and my point will be proven.
Well, anyway, it could be absolutely awful. But here's the thing. The other draw for me, artistically, I think that if they have the chance to make more of it, there's a greater opportunity to do right by the art. And, like, that was a draw for me, is I really liked the animal. I'm a big fan of animals.
Do right by the art.
Yeah, because, like, those character designs are really cool. And they could be drawn better. You know, they could be animated better. So I like
well,
animals.
I don't see how that's possible.
I like wild animals. I like animal facts. Not, like, furry stuff, but, like, real walking with children in nature, like, animal facts. And I like Gajinka. And so this has good of both, and if they improve those things, and if they make it cute girls doing cute things, and they discard the weird animal facts thing, like, boo, like, I'm here for the nature bits.
What occurs to me someone needs to do?
What?
Someone needs to make a Kimono Friends game using the Bubsy 3D engine. Yeah! Oh, someone make that.
Jesus.
That would be fantastic. It would fit the aesthetic of the show. You gotta use the worst 3D game engine. It'd be great.
Yeah.
You're like, it would be great.
Sure.
Can we move on?
Anyway, my point is, I am very skeptical But I don't think it's impossible for them to make a good one. I think it's impossible for them to do right by the creative team doing this. Like, that shitty regret. Even if it's great. Even if Kimono Friends Season 2 is great, then it's still shitty that they discarded the original team. It doesn't even matter. However, I do think that they could make a great Season 2 with talented people. Like, I don't think that this is something that's so intrinsically tied to the creator's perspective that, you know...
It's I not can tell we're going to argue it's, about this it's, until it comes out.
Piece. It's not an auteur piece, is what I'm saying. It's not an auteur piece, I don't think.
There's not a special genius, irreplaceable genius at the center of
no,
it?
No, I think it was lightning in a bottle, and that its success is reflective of the success of things that are sort of similar to it from the past. So, you know.
Well, what about One Punch Man?
I mean, a lot of... I mean, who knows? We have to learn more about...
Do you think it's a mistake? Do you think they should have waited?
You know, they already waited so many years that maybe not, but we'll just have to see.
One Punch Man was, what, 2015?
Yeah, but it's already kind of faded. Like, Attack on Titan, they waited too long. Straight up, they waited too long. It's still the biggest thing of the year, but it was the biggest thing of potentially the decade, and it went to maybe being the biggest. You know what I mean? It was a mistake to wait that long. And it was great. Like, that is not a comment on the quality, because it was really good. As a critic, I was really pleased with it. But as a consumer, like, that was maybe a mistake.
I mean, the only
it's a complicated question.
Literally the only metric we have for Attack on Titan Season 2 disappointment is BD sales not as good. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the only metric we have to go with, is BD sales not as good. But even four years ago when Attack on Titan originally came out, BD sales were higher overall.
Well, it was a different market.
How many percentage points has that market dropped since 2012?
So I'm taking that into account. I'm not using the Manami line to gauge this stuff anymore. I've regauged my expectations to what expectations for sales are actually like, and I look at stuff like light novel sales and manga sales and other stuff that's tied to that in order to get a better grasp on whether it was successful. Attack on Titan was a
they didn't want that to happen. I'm just saying that's the only measure that we have. So, but if you went and said like, well, what were the streaming numbers versus season one? You know, it was also much shorter.
See, I don't know what streaming numbers are, but I know it was still a big deal, and it's still good that they made it. But it's not like nobody cares. It definitely was not nobody cares anymore. Like, that was not the case.
Yeah,
it's just, and it could have been a lot more. But when you're already working from the biggest thing ever too could have been a lot more. It's still, you know, it's still a lot. So who knows?
So you think it's better that One Punch Man is coming out next year? You think that's better?
I won't know until we see the quality of it. But again, I feel like business and critique are two different halves of the. And business critique and respect for the artist's intent are like completely. They overlap a little bit, but they're kind of completely different parts of your brain and how you have to talk about this.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Also, I assume the mangaka signed off on this. I assume.
I don't know. I haven't seen any interviews to the contrary or whatever, but, you know.
Don't know. Before we take Twitter questions, let's talk about the live-action Your Name from J.J. Abrams and Paramount Pictures. Can I just tell you, I don't fucking care at all about that.
Yeah.
You can't come up with a less interesting-sounding project. That entire movie is interesting to look at because it's animated. Otherwise, it would just be two fucking people standing around in a city and a farm, a city and a village, a city and a crater. Like,
also,
that's fucking it. There's nothing else to look at.
So
because it has all this gorgeous Makoto Shinkai stuff in the background, it has all these gorgeous backgrounds, you're like, oh, I'm really wrapped up in this movie. But if it's live action, who gives a shit? It's just, like, it's a mountain range. Like, yeah, it's not going to be this gorgeous, unknowable vista of clouds and shit. Like,
also, it is basically a perfect movie. Like, it's really good.
It's like a really tight pop song.
And it's extremely Japanese. And I don't mean like, oh, we just can't understand the story. Like, the story is universal. The themes and like the tone and like the cultural, like the like this is the current emotional state of the nation thing that permeates that movie is what makes it special. And so I'm a stan, absolutely a stan for, yes, make more live-action anime adaptations. I do want to see more. Like, I like the idea. I like the idea of an adaptation in general. I want to see more, like, weird...
One of them will hit sometime.
Yeah, one of them will be good, I think, eventually.
Someone will eventually make a good one.
It is easy. I think it's easier to make a good, and if you care and you're trying, it is easier to make a good anime to live action adaptation than it is video games. They're closer in medium, so I think it'll happen. However, Your name is not a good choice. Like, Your Name, Dragon Ball, Naruto, these are successful things, but they don't translate to a live action very well, and they're very, and they don't translate to, this was made by an American for American audience very well. They're all very Japanese for different reasons, but, like, those three things don't make sense as American properties or live action properties, so don't pick them. And but if people are just looking at numbers, they're like, oh, this is the highest number of people recognize this, so let's just make this. But like Ghost in the Shell, Death Note, those were good choices. Not good movies, but not the worst thing in the world. Just not great movies. Kind of bad. But like those were good material choices. Your Name, bad material choice, completely redundant. What? Why even bother? Like, so my reaction to this is, why even bother?
Yeah.
This is pointless.
I mean, I have to assume that what they did was they saw the worldwide grosses everywhere else and then noticed that in America it barely registered as a blip. And they were like, oh, well, see, we can make a version of this that will connect with American audiences. Like, that's, like, I'm just speculating as to their thought process.
Right.
But it raked it in everywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah. Are you just like, oh, we'll make another $500 million?
Yeah, the reason it didn't hit big over here is, like, you know, the limits of what these anime companies putting these things out, what they can market and what theaters they can put
in. We don't have any idea. Like, that's impossible to tell.
If this was, if Your Name was for some reason picked up by Disney, like a Ghibli movie would be, and marketed like that, do you think the gross would have been higher? Not even great, but higher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you would have seen like TV commercials and stuff for it.
Yeah. Well, so that doesn't. That's one of the reasons it wasn't a big hit over here. Disney put, like, marketed like a movie over here.
Yeah. Disney would put like this much effort into a Ghibli marketing campaign, and even then, it would open okay. Like, yeah, it would do okay. You know, Arrietty opened okay. You know,
like, exactly. And I think that, like, even if Your Name looks like anime, if it had the marketing campaign of a meh whatever Disney Ghibli marketing, it still would have done better gross. I absolutely think that. So yeah. I think, like, it was marketed like a movie in China. It was marketed absolutely like a movie in Japan. Like, so just market it like a movie with the resources that you market all the other big movies in America, and then the gross would be higher. Yeah. So yeah. I think that was the thing at fault there.
But instead of doing that, they're just gonna make it again.
Yeah.
This time with the kid from Spider-Man and the girl from...
Oh, that's totally gonna happen. It's gonna be the kid from Spider-Man.
The kid from Spider-Man and the girl from...
I don't know. I'm not good at this casting sort of... I don't know these kids' names.
I don't either. I'm just assuming...
It's going to be Mia from Death Note. No, I'm just kidding. She's a little... No, she's
that
not.
Kid,
she
that
is not
kid in Spider-Man looks like he's fucking 11 years old.
He's
so... He looks so young. He's like in his 20s.
Yeah.
But he looks like he's 11. That must be why they cast him.
Yeah. It's funny.
Anyway. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and take some Twitter questions, provided that... I still have a mouse. Okay, cool. Okay, from Brave New Dust wants to know, do you think the Penguin Drum will ever get a release that has correct subtitles? What?
Nothing. Allergies.
You were whispering about your allergies?
Yeah, it was making me bleary, and I was trying to...
Well, we'll wrap up here in just a few minutes.
I'm sorry.
Do you think the Penguin Drum will ever get a release that has correct subtitles? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, sure. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It's like they can't really.
The subtitles in that first one were like Stephen Fosterized, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we want something without that. What was the line? It was like a line.
Panties for the win.
Panties for the win. That was when putting "for the win" in anything was like this huge. Hey, don't use internet languages subtitles. Do it.
The original, and what's so it doesn't have anything to do with the context of that line. The context of that line is him saying, "Oh, she's got her victory panties on," and he's not being like, "Ooh, sexy." He's being like, "Oh, this girl's gonna get it." Like he's just watching her sneak into this person's house to, you know, like, to seduce them or whatever, and he's like, oh, she's got her seduction panties on. Like, that's what he's saying. It's just in a total flap. And what they translated with an exclamation point was panties for the win, which does not communicate that at all. So.
Yeah. Anyway, hopefully they'll put it out. I don't know why they wouldn't, unless it didn't sell very well, and they're like, we're not going to make any money reissuing this or doing, or replicating new discs or anything like that.
Mm.
I don't know. They should do, like, a deluxe box set. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got a lot of questions about One Punch Man Season 2, which we already discussed. Marcos wants to know, how worried should we be about the American adaptation of Your Name being about two star-crossed lovers separated by faux 9/11? Faux 9/11? I think you should be more concerned about it being actual 9/11.
What if? And it's like, no. What people are concerned about is that
they're like, okay, the event that takes is going to be the 2016 election. And you're like, nah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that would be awful.
That would be terrible.
And what? It's a Trump supporter and a Hillary supporter.
No!
Oh, God. I felt bad saying that. I wanted to punch myself in the face while I was saying that.
No! No!
So, what people, the immediate thing, so all we have to go on, yeah, all we have to go on right now is J.J. Abrams being the director and the writer attached.
He's not the director, he's producer.
Oh, he's producer? Okay,
they have not announced a director for it. Mm-hmm.
Producer
he's directing this little movie called Star Wars Episode 9, you may remember.
I know that, but who knows with the way that these things are scheduled. But producer J.J. Abrams, which, yeah, if he's producing, that doesn't tell us a whole lot. And the writer is the guy who wrote Arrival, wasn't that a book first? Was it not a book first?
Arrival?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he wrote the adaptation of Arrival or the book, I don't know. But so that doesn't tell us a whole lot because Arrival was a good movie, but again, how many different stages of writing did that go to? It doesn't tell us a lot. But what does tell us a lot is the way it was described. Is this press or is this the way that J.J. Abrams is describing it purposefully is described as a sci-fi romance? Your Name is not science fiction. It's not even a little bit science fiction. It is, and so here's the other thing. People are like, it's not science fiction, it's magical realism. No, it's not magical realism either. It's fantasy. It can't be magical realism if there's specific non-emotional explanations for, but it's magic. It's magic. It's not magical.
Do you know what sci-fi romance is? Voices of a Distant Star.
Right.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. That's sci-fi romance.
Maybe that's what they more want to make. Voices of a Distant
Star.
But
here's the thing. Giving it like some sort of actual technological explanation like is...
Oh, they're totally going to do that.
That's what's going to happen. Americans need
someone
it to make
100%.
Someone
invented a machine or something.
Yeah. Yep.
God.
Right.
All the charm of that movie just sucked right out. Let's take all the magic
the original
out of this motherfucker.
Yeah, the original is like low. It's like urban fantasy is, I think, maybe the term. Urban fantasy for when...
Someone in the chat says magic blood. Yeah, it's going to be a fucking Damon Lindelof
script. It's in the same...
No, that's a Kurtzman, isn't it?
Yeah. It's in the same. It's not magical realism, but that would be like Groundhog Day. The movie Groundhog Day is not magical realism. It contains the same amount of magic and explanation for it as Your Name. They are not magical realism.
You're
don't
like
call them
busting that. Out the dictionary here.
Well, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because when people say magical realism and something is not magical realism, it's like no. This is fantasy. It's fantasy where they don't explain a whole lot and it's set in the real world. But that's not magical realism.
Why?
It means there's no explanation for it other than emotional reasons, kind
why
of.
Why
or nonsense.
Bother? At all? Why bother at all?
Yeah.
Just
midichlorians, somebody says.
Sony owns Funimation now.
Mm-hmm.
So just release the movie again.
Yeah.
You definitely have
the
means
to do it.
You have
a wider distribution.
Yeah. Jeez. Anyway. Petri wants to ask, what's your favorite Scrooge McDuck comic? What is your favorite Scrooge / Ducks comic and author? I was talking about the new DuckTales the other day, which is a good show. Every episode has been good.
Uh-huh.
I didn't expect to watch it, but it's on my DVR, and sometimes I watch it before going to bed. And it's fun, good show.
I've been there with you. I was watching it with you.
Yeah.
It was cute.
My comment was that Scrooge seems a little too nice. Uh-huh. He's a little nice, seems very lenient with kids. Even in the 80s show, didn't seem like he was that nice. In the comics, Scrooge is a dick.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like a huge dick to the kids, but he has like no tolerance for wasting money or anything. My favorite is the Carl Barks stuff from, you know, a long time ago. The Fantagraphics, I think, put out really great collections of the Carl Barks Ducks comics, if you're interested. Those are really good adventure comics. They're really well drawn, really good stories, really good adventure serial type stuff.
Uh-huh.
And if you ever get a chance to read it, The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck is straight up one of the best graphic novels I've ever read. It's really, really good. I know it sounds silly, but it's actually excellent.
I believe you.
Excellent graphic novel, Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. The new show seems like it's drawing from all of that. It also has much better characterizations and voices. So it's a dramatic improvement on the 80s show. Like, it is way better than that 80s show.
I mean, the voices...
I grew up with that. I loved it.
The voices of characters in 80s cartoons, even the good 80s cartoons, are, like, some of the most grating noises known to man, I want to say. Like voices, especially if it's supposed to be a funny character, voices of characters in 80s cartoons is like, that's like a layer of hell where those are playing on a loop.
Super nasal, so, you know, all Frank
Welker. It's like
Frank Welker right up in his sinuses.
Someone just destroying their throat for comedy. And we learned, look, that was early experiments in children targeted television with the advent of cable and diversified channels and stuff. Like children targeted. Explicitly children target television. We learned over time that what children really want is screaming. You don't necessarily have to have a wacky voice. They just want you to yell no matter what your voice sounds like.
Yeah.
In the 80s, we didn't know that, and we assumed maybe it was like extremely throat-destroying voices that they liked. And God, just the worst. Anyway.
Anyway, I like Carl Barks' stuff. It's really good. But Don Rosa's stuff is good, too. I have some of that as well. The show's good if you like ducks. It's a good show. Last two, Churo Dory wants to know, how big is your anime and manga backlog? It's huge, but everyone maintains one of those that's pretty big. There's always stuff I meant to see, want to see, mean to get to, and I try and find excuses to cover it for work so that I can do it during the workday instead of watching it in my own time. And that's generally how I get away with it, but I am blessed with a particularly lovely job where I can do that kind of thing.
Right. My job is just... I felt worse about a backlog before I worked at A&N, like, full-time.
Now it's just like, it's kind of necessary to have.
It's like, so before I felt bad about it because it's like, oh, I want to get to this. But when you work with anime like all the time, yes, there's still a backlog, but it's like, it doesn't matter.
Well, I like having that stuff there because if I get bored with whatever it is I'm watching or I'm not interested in anything new, I can always go to the backlog. There's always a mountain of cool, good stuff back there that I need. I like having a backlog. Yeah.
I feel good about the amount of anime that I'm digesting as it is, and it's going toward, like, you know, my living and that kind of thing. So, like, I don't feel bad about not getting to enough of it, because, like, I get to more than normal anyway, and it's like, contributing to my livelihood and community and stuff, so, it's good.
Back to DuckTales for just a minute. Somebody in the chat mentions that Donald Duck is fucking impossible to understand.
I don't understand what he's saying.
And it's important dialogue that they give him sometimes, where it's important for the context in the scene, and I cannot understand a fucking word.
Thank God he only gets the B-plots, because what is he saying? I don't know.
For now, like, if they're actually adapting comics, he plays a major role in a lot of the adventure stories, so... Mm. They don't seem to be in any kind of a rush to do adventure stories right now. They're just fucking around in Duckburg, which I get it, but I'm really curious to see how they're going to animate them, because there's like very ambitious sized adventures in those Duck comics. Like, they get into some stuff. Okay, that's enough Duck talk. Last question, Dollar Bang wants to know, I've recently felt The Weight of the World, which is the song from Nier, thanks to a great metal cover I found on YouTube. If we've seen the same metal cover of Weight of the World, it's fucking great. It's really good. The dude's a little cheesy, but he's great, and his video is great. It's a really good cover of Weight of the World. Look that shit up.
Metal? A little cheesy? The devil, you say?
Are there any other anime metal covers you enjoy? I used to listen to heavy metal when I was a kid. I don't really listen to it that much anymore, although I went on an Iron Maiden kick again a couple of months ago. That cover is really great. I have not, like, looked out for other metal covers. Not really something I naturally seek out, but that Nier cover was so good. Like, that was good shit. So, I don't know, what do you think?
I prefer punk and butt rock covers of things.
Punk covers are more fun, I think, than him. Metal covers are usually like 7 or 8 minutes long, and it's just a guy like bellowing.
When I say butt rock, I mean emo rock, because the butt rock doesn't mean anything specific.
It used to mean like Poison and...
Yeah, but those things aren't really made anymore. So, like, but when I say butt rock, when I say butt rock derogatorily, I mean like Nickelback. I mean faux hard rock for boring people. But anyway, so like,
it is faux.
But what I like are like pop punk and emo rock covers of things, but metal not so much.
Yeah.
I'm a little over the miggity miggity miggity. If I'm gonna listen to miggity miggity miggity, it's gonna be from the 80s and the early 90s, and yeah.
Someone in the chat is asking me to mention Heat Guy J. I won't do it.
You already did.
You got me again. I'm gonna be on the lookout next time. I'm gonna be like, don't do it. Don't give in. Don't say Heat Guy J. I'm gonna zero in on it.
Candlejack.
Someone else in the chat wants to know if we're gonna do in-depth analysis of Neo Geo Neo Geo.
Well, it might as well be.
Neo Yokio. No, probably not. Feels like the ship sailed on that one anyway. People are kind of over it now. Yeah. So no.
Yeah.
Sadly, I don't think there is an in-depth conversation. You could kind of have an in-depth conversation about Neo Yokio, I guess. What do you think?
I think you could, but you would. I think it requires understanding. You would have to have a Vampire Weekend fan there, and you would have to have somebody who has like a lot of knowledge about Jaden Smith's career. I think the only interesting conversation to be had about Neo Yokio involves understanding these guys' perspective. Because it does, it isn't just something they didn't give a shit about. It has a weird, specific, like, perspective that's really odd and foreign to anime and also anime fans, so I think that should be the discussion. It's like, okay, so, bougie New York City dickheads. They are talking about those things, but they also are those things, and so that's why this show is so weird. You know.
Yeah. Okay, I think that about does it. Jacob's allergies are consuming him, and he's going to also stream. If you're watching this, you can head on over to his Danganronpa V3 stream right after this.
Right, it'll be at 7. It's going to be at 7, like,
so 7 o'clock, you can watch Jacob's stream over on Twitch. And anyway, thank you guys so much for hanging out and coming to the live show. Everybody who comes to the live show, we love you. Thank you very much for showing up. The theme song is called Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us right here on YouTube, on iTunes, Google Play, Music, Stitcher, Radio. Leave us comments and things, ratings, reviews. We really love it. Thank you very much. We'll see you all next week, probably.
Right. Bye-bye.